Hi, this is Billy Kirk, the principal of Lumpkin County High School. In the Principal's Podcast, we set out to discover the stories and backgrounds of Lumpkin County High School staff, both within and beyond our school campus. Our goal is to uncover the varying personalities and hobbies of our exceptional staff and students, not only in the school system, but get a glimpse into their lives. This podcast is produced and directed by our fabulous students here at Lumpkin County High School. Some of the questions we will be asking: who are you really? What passions drive you to be uniquely you? What drives you? What inspires you? What makes you smile? How do you measure success? These are the questions we present for this episode's featured star.
Hi, I'm Colton Gilreath here with Brianna Donahue, and we're here to talk about her writing.
Hi.
So just to start off, what is your favorite author book?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I would have to say right now, Tolkien and just The Hobbit. I've been trying my best to get through it for maybe 2 months now, just because I've been so busy with school and summer and everything. But I just love the way that he uses description and the way he crafts his world building.
Yeah, I know. He always had a certain ring to it. So what inspired you to start writing?
Probably my mom. She is an author and owns a publishing company, and she's always just been a really great patron of the arts in general, but obviously writing. And it's always just been helpful to have somebody to go to and say, hey mom, I don't know how to word this quite right, can you help me out? And I think my teachers have also definitely kind of been proponents of me writing and just having an imagination, I suppose.
Have you always been going to your mother, or did that start recently?
I think it's just kind of been an always thing ever since, well, I was homeschooled in first grade, so I kind of had to go to her for writing assignments for that. I didn't really have a choice. But yeah, pretty much always.
How long would you say it takes you to typically write a plot for your stories?
A plot probably takes like 2 hours. Whether that plot changes over the course of the next 3 weeks is almost definite. But it doesn't usually take too long. I'm pretty set in what I want at least the theme to be of my stories, if not the plot.
So you mentioned your mother writes earlier. What is it your mother usually writes about?
She can be anywhere from romance to mystery, generally Southern Gothic. But she has also written a book called Writing is Meditation, which is about, writing, but using that as a kind of catharsis throughout life.
Have any of them been published?
Yes, all three of those have been. And she is currently working on a romance about Egyptology.
Do you think you take after in your writing?
I like to think so. I know that my diction definitely comes from her and my word usage, specifically how I write dialogue.
I think your genes do too.
We definitely like using dialect more than I think I usually see.
What would you say your writing kryptonite is?
Kryptonite? I am not from a different planet, nor has that planet been destroyed. But I would probably say actually getting things on the page, because I can sit and think about a story and I'll have everything down and like totally solidified, but I just can't put it on the page for whatever reason. I tend to get stuck really easily. But usually when that happens, I'll go and just doodle my main character or think about the background or the scene that I'm trying to set, and it usually just kind of eases that writing block.
I kind of have the same problem. Every time I try to write something on the page, the paper moves, and I've called an exorcist, and I don't know, I can't figure it out.
Well, you know, you might want to talk to one of us ladies about that with our Southern Gothic roots.
I've tried talking to God.
Maybe try harder.
If you could tell your younger writing self anything, what would it be?
Don't be so hard on yourself. I have always been so critical of everything I've ever created, especially my writing, because I felt like I had big shoes to fill. But, I mean, it's really just about expressing yourself and communicating what you feel and just my opinions on the world, I suppose. I think the biggest writing advice you can give anyone is to read more, Because once you read more and you understand what you like about a certain subject, then you can put that forward in your own writing.
Do you think those expressing of opinions and your beliefs is expressed in your current writing?
Most definitely. Usually it's just about lone women and kind of their struggle against mainly internal forces rather than external. And sorry, I got sidetracked. Yeah.
What advice would you give to future writers your age?
Just keep swimming. I know it sounds silly, but genuinely just keep trying and you're gonna write really bad stuff and you just have to get over it. You just have to keep writing. And you can go back and edit those as much as you want, but really the best way to keep going is persistence. And whether that applies to applying to writing journals or whatever, just keep trying.
Yeah, I remember I was tutoring someone for writing and I told them to keep swimming and they went in the pool and all the pages got soggy. And
you are a swimmer. You would know. That was terrible advice. Of course they took it literally.
So now our listeners and I get the honor to hear your writing. So can you give us a quick description of it?
Well, it's called Tranquility Base 5 and it is a sci-fi short story just about everyday life on the moon for a young woman.
Well, blow us away.
Hopefully not. Okay. Tranquility Base 5 by Brianna Donahue. Cynthia woke up late that morning, much later than she had intended, though time hadn't mattered too much in those days. Everything had just felt stagnant, what with the waltz of the sun seeming so hesitant and the shadow of the earth so tired. The earth that reflected the marred pole and pale craters that riddled the moon she inhabited. The temperature that day was neither hot nor cold, just as it always was. A decidedly nice day. The clouds were fluffy despite the thin artificial atmosphere, the birds chirped sweetly despite the scrape of their metallic wings, and the gardenia smelled of that one perfume your grandmother loved. You know, the one that tries so hard to smell natural but just manages to miss the mark. The satellite that Cynthia had wished revolved around her existence blinked shyly in the distance. Cassie the dog looked thoughtfully at her hand. Our heroine made those very observations, just as she always did every morning. That special day, she stepped out onto her little ecosystem to perform the daily chores that she'd so carefully crafted to keep herself from going mad. 1, water the herbs. 2, feed the dog named Cassie and give her sufficient head rubs. No less than 5 minutes will do. 3, whistle to the warbling machines surrounding you. See if they whistle back, even though they never do. 4, let the cows and goats out of the pasture. Cassie may stay inside the house until 11 a.m., then must go watch them. 5, brush the goats, long-haired cows, and dog as necessary. 6, feed yourself. She'd always wished that she could milk the cows as they were intended to be, and that the goats would eat the messy grass reeds, but the reeds never got messy, and the cows never nursed young, so there was no need for such things. The solitary woman wondered if those back on Earth had intended for them to happen, for the surroundings to feel more natural. Perhaps either they'd forgotten or thought they'd be too much of a hassle. Perhaps it was, but the small change could have at least helped with the monotony. Once her chores were finished, she set about the rest of her daily tasks. Maintenance was always first. Check the oxygen and make sure carbon dioxide is diffusing properly. Make sure utilities are all working well. Crank the generator. Replicate more food. Jar it. Vacuum seal it. And on and on. That was the most difficult part to handle after Mother passed away. She'd always had the analytical and patient mind that Cynthia lacked. You get that from your father, that creative streak of yours. The ache had subsided to a dull one by that point. No longer does she sob herself to sleep, not after her mother's corpse played a dies irae of beeps and whistles and had shown lights at her when she tried to bury it beneath the oak tree. After that, it just sat in the living room next to the bust of Pallas. Cynthia had thought they'd always could have been sisters since she was a little girl. She'd supposed that rang more true than she'd ever known. After making sure that her world wouldn't crumble around her physically, she set about maintaining her mental health. A good cup of warm apple cider and a touch of cinnamon and Louisa May Alcott's synthesized voice always set her straight. She adjusted the leaves outside to autumn the next day. The computer that updated her on the blue marble down below read that it had been 200 degrees Fahrenheit for the past few weeks, or maybe even months. But she was in a fall mood, so who really cared about the people down there, faring in the summer heat? But she needed some crisp breezes and warm tones. Besides, Mother wasn't there to complain about being cold anymore, so lowering it to 60 degrees couldn't hurt. Then again, that nagging was probably all just programming in the end.
So I am just curious, why the bust of Pallas illusion?
Well, one of my favorite poems has always been The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Ever since I was little, I've just been completely obsessed with him and all his thoughts on solitude and madness. And I wanted to reflect that here. And Pallas is another word for Athena in the Greek Parthenon. And with, you know, her mother being revealed to be a robot and all, she's very warlike and logical, just as Athena is.
I read Raven a lot. I never did get it. It kept on flying away. All right. Thank you for reading part one of your fantastic story. Are you ready for part two?
Yes, I am. Here is part two of Tranquility Base 5. Breezing through Little Women like it was a pie had always lifted her spirits. She'd always wanted sisters to share her existence with. Mother had told her that she was one of a kind, completely incapable of being replicated. Even so, someone completely opposite from her would still help with, well, she wasn't entirely sure what it would help with, but having someone to write plays with would be nice. Not that Cassie wasn't company enough. When she read her ivory tomes, the golden retriever laid across her tie-dye socked feet. The feeling of the animal's breathing had always soothed her, but the fear of waking up one day finding wires instead of whiskers almost overtook that calm. So, more cider and more romanticism to mollify it was. The audiobook's voice eventually said farewell as the book was closed. Thus, she stumbled upon her least favorite part of the routine, sending updates back to Earth. Hello, this is Cynthia Jazari reporting from Mare Serenitatis. She used to love the prospect of touching base with the scientists, one of which was her father. But since Mother took the big leap, there had been nothing but silence. She tried not to think of the correlation too much. It is Sol 7300 on Tranquility Base 5, and also so happens to be my 20th birthday. To celebrate, I plan on making a cake without the food replicator. Hopefully I won't burn the whole place down. Trying to find some comfort in what little agency I hold has been helpful in retaining mental acuity, if nothing else. Actually, it'd be lovely if the base could maybe send up some puzzles or more books, at your earliest convenience, of course. I know you're busy coming up with ways to dispose of nuclear waste and curb global warming and create defenses against meteors like those ones you said would barely miss Earth a few days ago. Thank goodness they didn't hit y'all, huh? If one of you, especially Father, wanted to visit, I'm sure I could help with bettering the world and other sciencing. Lord, what am I even saying? Diagnostics on the homestead are sable. Cassie is as energetic as ever. She's a wonderful companion, but I am growing a bit, well, never mind. Please answer back again at your earliest convenience. I'll be waiting here patiently. This has been Experiment Jazari, now signing off. A tear might have run down her cheek, but no one could have seen aside from the stars and the fluorescent lights shrouding her. Maybe she should leave, find a way to create a spacesuit and walk out into the airless abyss, or find a way to signal someone other than base control, or send a flare their way. What did she have to lose, after all? As she harshly wiped away the tear, a thud was heard outside, which was decidedly not the cattle or the goats being overly rambunctious. It was a satellite, glittering in the new day sun. The satellite. It had come down right on the gardenias, their sweet pheromones wafting about the little atmosphere. Happy 20th, my darling, it read. A large green button was pressed by quivering hands, and an old cassette tape popped out. Mother had always insisted on keeping the VHS player for Father's sake, insisting that he'd use it when she eventually visited. Cynthia placed it gently on the deck when she'd finally shambled back inside and delicately touched the according symbols. The speaker crackled to life as the static dissipated. Hey, kiddo, I've missed you bunches. It's old Dad. Sorry that I haven't been able to be with you and your mom up there, but we had to make sure it was habitable for actual human life. Why it took the boys in suit so long to decide after a cyborg has successfully inhabited lunar space for, I guess it'll be 20 years by the time the shoot's down to you? Well, it's just beyond me. But boy, I'm sure glad you know all about the whole half-human, half-robot thing. It's really ground your mom's gears to keep that from you if you catch my grift. He chuckled and sounded just like the scrape of the bird's wings, despite that laugh being the only true organic thing she'd ever heard. Alrighty, well, I'll be seeing you super-duper soon, sweet girl. I promise, the second they let me in a rocket. I love you, and I can't wait to finally meet you. This is Major Tom, signing off. He gave a mock salute, and the tape flickered out, successfully mocking her. She thought that more tears had come, but upon further reflection found a lack of wetness on her skin that had always somehow been too soft. Skin that felt as though it begged to crawl off of her. The earth, riddled with holes and clouds of ash, had spun behind her in the window. Cassie barked, chasing a rogue bluebird. The kitchen alarm sang to let her know that it was time for nightly chores. Louisa May Alcott had still been open in the corner. Maybe I'll just wait a little bit longer for someone, she thought, just to be sure.
All right. That was a fantastic story, Brianna.
Thank you.
I do have just some questions.
Uh-huh.
When you write, do you only write when you're inspired, or do you more force yourself to?
If I could, I would write every single day, but just because of my schedule, I just am completely unable to. If I could, I would be a total hedonist and just sit all day being totally consumed by the arts.
So how long have you been writing?
I really seriously started when I was maybe like 8 or 9 in fifth grade. You were actually in the same class, Miss Young's class, when we wrote, I think it was just a horror story or something. I don't even know it was supposed to be horror, but I wrote a horror story, and it was supposed to be 5 pages long, and it ended up being 20, because I was just totally gripped by whatever crazy thing I was trying to say, and it ended up being pretty much incomprehensible when I try to read it nowadays, but I was really enthralled by it then. And then ever since, I've just kind of been writing as much as I can whenever I can find the time.
Yeah, when I was 8, I was forgetting to put my shirt on. So you're that's about your
I'm achieve. Leagues above you.
A couple under the sea. So when did you start writing this story?
Actually, I was prompted by Abiella to start it right before fall break. She asked if I had any stories, and I was like, well, the one I have isn't exactly school appropriate. It's darker. But this had been kind of rattling around in my brain for a while. There were the first maybe 2 paragraphs written, and I just figured that I'd go ahead and stick with it.
Well, where did the idea originally come from?
Ray Bradbury. I had been reading There Will Come Soft Rains and just toying with the idea of someone not knowing that the apocalypse had happened, and just being stuck in complete solitude. But there's also an album that I've been really inspired by Arctic Monkeys. It's their 2018 album, Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino. And Tranquility Base is actually where the first moon landing took place on the moon, and that's what the area is called. So I kind of took from that with the notion that there are now 5 Tranquility Bases, and people have been continuing to experiment, and she didn't know, or they're just previous landing sites and people have left, or just whatever your mind conjures.
And there was quite a few references to There Will Come Soft Rains, nuclear waste, ash, pre-recorded messages. Were those on purpose, or am I just looking too deep?
Most definitely. I always kind of loved the like chirping from the house, just kind of beeping at you and singing at you like, hey, move along with your day, go do stuff, get off your butt.
So how long do you think it would take you to publish a book?
Ooh, to publish. Well, the publishing process takes maybe a year with, you know, edits and author coaching and all that jazz. So probably 3 years, 2 just to write the story. I mean, again, if I didn't have all the things I have going on, it would probably take maybe just a year. But I'm not the most... let's say consistent with keeping up with my writing. It gets done eventually, and I meet my deadlines, but, you know.
So how do you, with this story, how did you get over the kryptonite you mentioned?
Well, mostly the fact that I had a deadline, which was today. Maybe I got it done yesterday and did the final edits today, but I will say that I am happy with it, and I could have done better time management-wise, but we had some things come up over fall break that, you know, weren't really movable. But, yeah.
Yeah, the microphone didn't pick it up, but she actually is still typing it currently.
So. Yes, she is. I was so tempted to, like, change words around here and there while I was reading it. I spelled reads wrong.
No, it was a great story.
Thank you.
Is there any advice you'd give to novice writers? What would you give?
I don't think there is any such thing as a novice writer. I think you are either starting or you've been doing it for 50 years. But I think that even then, you can still be novice with all the things you can learn. But mostly, I would just say, stick with it. I mean, there's nothing better than persistence and determination in everyday life. And that'll help with writing, that'll help with grades, that'll help with relationships and friendships and everything. As long as you're persistent and you stick with what you believe in and what you want to put out into the world, then you'll do great.
Have you ever written a whole book?
No, I have started one, and it's a fantasy. I was mostly just playing with the idea of a lack of plot, kind of. Mostly just the main character being a side character. And I have this man who has lived in a town his whole life, and he'd really like to just stay there for forever. He's a bit of a hobbit. But he's, in his town, there are certain courting gifts that you have to, you know, get through in order to woo a beloved. And there's this woman that he really loves, and they're going to get married, but he has to still get her these gifts. And they can't just be things from around the village. He has to go and, of his own accord, go find things around the world, and he meets people along the way, and gets kind of involved in a war. But it's all just kind of meandering. And a lot of that comes from things like The Mandalorian, where he's less of an agent of his own story and more just kind of meandering through. I've always really loved stories like that. I know lots of people don't, but they're just like so aimless to me in a way that's comforting. Does that make sense? Thanks for letting me ramble.
No, a couple of people like songs about that. You know, the Wanderer.
So Dust in the Wind.
So I take it you do plan to write books, though.
Maybe. I would like to, but I really would like to focus on my visual artistic career. I would love to write a graphic novel one day. That's just kind of my main goal. I'm really inspired by people like Neil Gaiman, who has written Sandman and lots of iterations of Batman, and Coraline, which you might have heard of in Good Omens. But he's just got this such a way with words and story crafting, and everything feels so incredibly visual that I feel if I ended up writing like that, I would just rather draw it. Does that make sense? I've loved art since I was younger than that first story that I poured my heart into. But I don't know, graphic novels have always just really consumed me.
Yeah, I wrote 2,000 words of description, but then I thought, why don't I just take two pictures?
Why not just draw it, man? It's so much easier, yeah.
Have you ever entered a writing competition?
I have applied for a scholarship that I won. Well, not like a scholarship, but I got to go to Jekyll at a discount price. It was the Jekyll trip a while back, and I got to go because we didn't really make a lot of money because my mom was so, diligent in, starting her career in publishing, and I really admire her that for, really admire that about her. But I don't know that I've done any other ones. I think I did something for the Daughters of the American Revolution forever ago. And I also did a painting that I won third place for. I don't think that my writing story placed anything, but
It's a bit of an understatement. So have you ever written in competition? Only one. I only won a scholarship from
it. It wasn't that big a deal. I mean, it was just an essay about why I like the beach. It's not,
Would you be interested in publishing the story?
This story?
Yeah.
Maybe. Writing journals can tend to be kind of on the pretentious side. It's probably the wrong word to use, but I'm going to use it anyway. And usually just for like the older, writers in literature and Charles Dickens published A Tale of Two Cities and Great Expectations in the newspaper, And nowadays we really only have high elite writing journals where you have to be, you have 7 degrees even to get your paper in there. So, I would like to, but I don't know. At the discretion of the universe, I suppose.
Yeah. I tried to publish my writing journal, uh-huh. And it was very convenient that the publisher was a modern art museum because it was just like 52 pages of just blank paper. So,
with a couple of ink splatterings, here and there.
Yeah, that counts. My pen broke, but I'm really lucky on that one. So do you know where you would publish your stories?
Not really. my mom, I keep bringing up my mom, but she really has been like the biggest support ever. But her Shadows in the South is Southern Gothic short stories all in one collection. And I would probably like to do something like that because I feel like short stories are so much more accessible when they're just in easy to read book form. And they just feel easier to touch by us teenagers who just want to read, you know, things that aren't 50,000 pages long with like diatribes on, I don't know, capitalism and all that jazz.
So I obviously know you've lived in the South your entire life. Have your mother?
I have. Since I was four, how old was I? right? Yeah. Counting on my fingers. when I was four, we moved to Washington and we lived there for a little bit. And then when I was seven, we moved to Alpharetta. So I haven't actually lived in the South my whole life. We lived up in Tacoma. So I've got a little bit of Yankee in me, which I know is terrible. Aside from that, my mom she's lived in Germany. So a little bit up north and a little bit that way, a little bit over the pond. But pretty much, yeah. I mean, Southern culture is a big part of it, but my great-grandfather was a doctor, and so they were always kind of in like that high, upper middle class kind of Southern culture where like you'd go to dinners with people who have been in the, you know, surgery for the past 30 hours. And so she's always been, you know, a proper lady and having to cross your ankles. And she taught me all about which forks to use when I was little and making casseroles when people are sad and, you know, Southern things that are, you know, less part of culture today, I suppose.
So you've actually spent some of your life around Yankees?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry for your
terrible
loss.
Yeah, no, all I did was listen to Nirvana and drink black coffee and have no taste in anything. It was terrible.
No, I can tell your mother has taught you a lot about etiquette. I know, for reference, a couple months ago, I had to go to a military ball, and I took Brianna here as my plus one.
That was me.
And, we went, me and all the other cadets, we went through a bunch of, like a month-long of lessons of table etiquette and dancing etiquette and all that, and I got there, I was like, oh, I'm going to have to make sure Bree doesn't ruin, and I got there. I'll be danged if she didn't start correcting me on everything.
I did. Well, didn't you use like a salad fork to stir your coffee or whatever and then decide that you hated it anyway?
Well, I knew I hated coffee. That was only a discovery. Do you think there's anything the school or community can do in order to encourage more creative writing?
Well, see, thing is, I was actually planning on doing writing workshop this year, but then it got canceled because they didn't have enough funding. So, you know, I think that's something that would be great. But I think it'd be great to bring that back. And because that would be a published writing journal that at the end of the year, I think they were planning on putting in short stories and essays and art and publishing it. But I don't think that, I mean, teachers are busy enough as is. So I think that maybe a student-run journal or something like that would be really cool. I could honestly maybe push for that in student council or, I don't know, something like that. That's probably dreaming a little big. But I think just letting students write in their free time and encouraging that, I think would really do some good. Because I know people who hate writing just because they've only done it in an academic setting.
All right, well, I got some good news for you.
Yes.
We are currently in the Student-Led Journalism Club.
Okay, well.
So that ship already sailed.
Wait, student-led? I didn't know that.
Well, they don't know. They kind of put me in charge, and you know, marching, you go on a wall, and I went straight down. So it was really weird.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a risk to take any day, putting you in charge of anything.
All right, Brianna, me and all of our listeners owe you a huge thank you for coming out here and sharing your fantastic story with us.
Thank you so much for having me and for being so delightful.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Lumpkin County High School's Principals Podcast. You can look for our channel on Podbean, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Thank you for being a part of our tribe.
Our tribe, our stories.